let's bring in our Leafs reporter from The Athletic, Jonas Siegel. You can hear Jonas on Overdrive a couple times next week, and we're excited to have him on right now for our last show of the season. So it's a celebratory show, Jonas. But
Ooh,
I'm
thanks, guys.
Last guest, and we chose and anointed Jonas Siegel as the man to call.
The curtain call guest, and it's an exciting one, and it's an exciting day. Yesterday was free agent frenzy. We saw your article yesterday. It was excellent. The question was, did they get worse? Did the Leafs get worse? And you worked through all of that in the article. But up till right now, we've heard Kyle Dubas isn't done. Do you think the Leafs got better?
I don't think so. They might be better if the goaltending is better than it was. Like, Julia, you pointed out, I don't know why it's become, like, accepted that they had – maybe it's just personality, but it's, like, this idea that they had amazing goaltending last year, and, like, there's this – they really didn't. Like, Jack Campbell was excellent the first few months of the season, and then after that, it wasn't really good for him. It wasn't good, obviously, for Peter Mrazek, so – if Matt Murray and Ilya Samsonov can be pretty good, that's something. That's a reason to think that they can kind of keep a pace, I guess, from last year and maybe even be a little bit better. That's a huge if just based on how those guys have played the last couple of years and obviously injuries in the case of Matt Murray. I think in terms of like their forward depth, they're a little weaker than they were. And one thing I didn't point out in the article that I kind of wish I had or had the brain power to write a little bit more about. It's just like this is an accumulation of kind of what happens when you're built the way that they're built. And then the cap obviously didn't go up. At some point, like, there's going to be a penalty. And it's just – it's hard to find Michael Bunting and David Camp and guys like that every year when you don't have a lot to spend and there's other teams willing to spend it. So, like, at some point there's going to be – you know, a drop off in certain areas. And it looks like that right now. Obviously it could change before the start of the year. But I think they're a little bit worse with an asterisk with the goaltending.
You could have saved a little bit more on the Matt Murray trade though. Like if you're looking to get more cap space, and I heard Dubas's availability yesterday saying it was basically take it or leave it at 25%. I mean, how do you think he made the right decision to take that at 25%? Or do you think there could have been, you know, maybe a different situation elsewhere that could have been prosperous?
I would not have, but obviously they really believe in him. And, you know, if it's hard. Like, I struggle with this idea, well, Ottawa says they're only retaining 25%, and if they're not retaining 20, if they're retaining more than that, there's no deal. It's like, okay, well, then just you can keep Matt Murray. You know,
right.
Like,
that's what
clearly
I think
they – right, and clearly they didn't want to do that. And so, like, you can pay 100% if you want. And now maybe there's another team out there that was going to trade for him. I just don't see who that was. Like, the teams that spent on goalies, there weren't a lot of them. And, you know, there was Darcy Kemper. There was Edmonton, obviously, with Jack Campbell. Like, I just don't know who that team is that was going to spend $4.68 million on Matt Murray for the next two seasons based on the way the last few seasons have gone. Like, maybe that's true. It's hard to believe. So the alternative, if they don't do it, okay, well, who are your goalies? Well, I mean, obviously you could have signed Samsonov and then maybe you're signing some other goalie in free agency. Like maybe it's Samsonov and Halak. Now, is that like super reassuring, a combo that's going to win you a Stanley Cup? Probably not, but it's not like what they have right now is super reassuring either, but they're obviously big believers in Matt Murray. They're looking at upside with these two guys. And if one of them hits Steven, they've got something. That's just like a big if. But I just don't know that there are a lot of guys who would have looked at it and said, yeah, they've nailed it down. They've got their goalie of the future and like they don't have to worry about this anymore.
AB and I were playing some good call or bad call before, and I'll put this one to you. The question was, who will start more games essentially next season, Samsonov or Matt Murray? There's a huge discrepancy in what they're making, but do you see a world in which Samsonov starts more games than Matt Murray next year?
I mean, there's a world for sure. Injuries, performance, but I don't buy this. I know Kyle Dubas was asked about it yesterday, and like I don't know what he's really supposed to say. I guess he could say like Matt Murray's going to be the starter, but like I don't know that you want to box yourself in, I guess, if you don't have to. But there's no way that they're not going into the season saying Matt Murray is like our number one guy, and he's going to start in the games, and Samsonov will start the rest. that's in pencil because obviously who knows how Matt Murray's going to perform. Who knows if he's going to be able to stay healthy. If Samsonov outplays him, he ends up playing more games. Like, there's so many different scenarios that could happen. But I can't believe that they're not going into the season saying Matt Murray isn't our starter. You don't make a trade like that. You don't, everything we just talked about, like, you're not doing that to make him like part of your tandem and like, just let's just see how it goes. No, you believe that he can be the guy that he was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and really kind of cement things in the crease. And if he can't, obviously they're hoping that Samsonov can kind of live up to the potential that he had before.
Yeah, big bets made by Kyle Dubas in the goaltending tandem here. We're chatting with Jonas Siegel, Leafs reporter for The Athletic. A little more of some smaller bets made on some forwards that they signed yesterday. Nicolas Aubé-Kubel, Adam Gaudette, and Dennis Malgin. What do you think that those signings could bring to the Maple Leafs?
I really like Aubé-Kubel. Like, I was watching him pretty closely in the playoffs just because I knew that there was a chance that Colorado wasn't going to be able to keep him. He played, you know, he didn't play a lot, obviously, in the playoffs for them, played on their fourth line. I just think he's going to bring a different dimension than what they have. Like, he's a good forechecker. He's physical. He's energetic. I think he might be able to give them something offensively, depending on where he plays. Like, right now, the way things kind of look, and obviously they could sign someone in 5 minutes, but, like, I kind of think he might even end up on their third line to start. So I like him. Gaudette, obviously, they're taking a chance that he can give them something offensively at the bottom of their lineup. And I just like the idea that they're going to get a little bit younger, a little bit more, I don't know, energetic and versatile at the bottom of the lineup. But they're definitely thinner than they were before. And as for Malgin, I don't have a ton of thoughts. Like, he didn't really show very much in a very small sample size when he first came to Toronto. So he's like TBD. The guy I'm kind of actually thinking about a lot now is Robertson. Like, if there is ever a chance for him to, I don't know, cement an NHL job, it's now. Like, they can move things around where if he can come into camp and, like, really perform, there's a chance, like, he's starting the season on their second line. Like, they need some offense, and he's a guy who has the potential to be able to score.
Well, you talk about the fact that they need offense, and absolutely that's the case. Both Ilya Mikheyev and Andrei Kasha walk out the door. That's 35 goals in your bottom six that are gone. I look at Aubé-Kubel. I look at Adam Gaudette. I mean, we'll see what happens with Malgin, but, you know, Joey Anderson, whoever ends up, you know, making up that bottom six, like, how concerned are you over the depth scoring going into next season if they don't make other additions to that group?
Well, so another thing I wish I would have written, but it's like two questions, because, like, during the regular season, they're going to be fine. Like, I mean, you look last year, they scored a ton. Now, they were really top heavy last year, obviously, with that top line scoring, like, I think it was like 40% of the 5-on-5 goals. And I think that'll probably be the case again next year. Like, they're going to be top heavy again, I would think. It's more like you start to think ahead, like, to the playoffs, like, are they going to have enough scoring? And obviously we've seen in past playoffs, but, like, you could never have enough scoring, but that's something that they can address in season. Like, if they did nothing else for the rest of the offseason, this was just a group that they have, I'd look at it, you'd look at it, we'd all look at it and be like, wow, doesn't look like they really have enough scoring at the bottom of the lineup. But, like, that's something you can trade for in season. Like, you can go out and get Taylor Hall or Claude Giroux or somebody like that to address that need. So that's kind of where I'm at. But, like, today, it looks like they're a little bit short, but they're still going to score a ton of goals. Like, I can't remember if they were first or second in 5-on-5 goals last year, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're just, like, right there again, even with these absences.
Well, you walked me right to my next question, Jonas. What else do you need to see Kyle Dubas do this offseason to consider it a success?
That's a tough one.
Sorry. Hard hitters on our last day.
Obviously, they have to figure out the situation with Rasmus Sandin. I know Kyle Dubas said it's not that complex, and, like, really, he's right in theory. Like, he can just accept his qualifying offer, and that's the end of it, and he can just come back. But it doesn't seem like all is super well there, and it's not really clear what the plan is for him next year. Like, where is he going to play, which side, with who, how much. So, like, that's a little uncertain. Like, as to other needs, like, there are some forwards out there. I haven't checked if you guys have signed since I last checked this morning. But there are some forwards out there, like, if they can get that guy, like, they could use another top nine forward. They could use another center, honestly. Like, I seem to be alone in wondering about John Tavares at center, like, what they're going to do there, what the plan is to kind of figure out that second line, because for the second half of the season, they literally did not want to play John Tavares and William Nylander together. So, like, what's going to happen there? What are they doing? So there are some guys out there like Evan Rodriguez, Paul Stastny. I like Zach Aston-Reese, though, with Abbé Kubel. Maybe they feel they don't need that dimension now anymore, but there are still some guys out there, if they can get them in for cheap, that would really help them.
Well, I toyed with the possibility of like a Dylan Strome. You know, you bring in a Dylan Strome potentially. You may have to make some other moves to open up the space, but you bring him in and maybe he's your second line center, and then you do move Tavares to the wing.
Yeah, but I don't know that makes you, like, he has the exact same questions, honestly, that Tavares does. Like, I don't see a world. I mean, it's possible. Like, I have a hard time thinking you're feeling like you're better defensively with Strome at center instead of Tavares. Like, I don't know if the fit makes sense to me. Would it make sense as an upside play? Sure. Like, I just don't know that totally solves the issue that they have. Like, I've wondered about Paul Stastny. Like, he's played wing mostly last year. He's also older. He was also pretty costly last year. Is he a second-line center at this point? Like, Evan Rodriguez would be a little bit of a stretch probably for second-line center, but I wouldn't be against something like that. It's tough. Like, it's really hard when you don't have a lot of cap space, and there aren't a lot of guys out there for cheap. I mean, you guys saw what did Ryan Strome get? 5x5?
Five, yeah.
And Andrew Kopp got, like, 5 and change. Like, that's what it costs, and they obviously just don't have that.
Cap room, eh? The devil's invention. That's Jonas Siegel on the phone from The Athletic. And earlier, we were putting together a much-too-early Leafs roster based on the way that the team is structured right now and who they have on the team right now. And we were battling Jonas to find a place for one Rasmus Sandin on the roster because of the jam up the left side. And we heard Dubas say specifically yesterday that they'd prefer to keep him on the left side. How do you think that situation shakes out? See a roster player moving on, maybe? Because I just don't see a world in which Sandin spends another season in the press box.
So I'm glad you asked this, because I'm working on a story for tomorrow that literally kind of asks a lot of these questions. So I've been thinking about that. And I mean, I guess you can move someone else over. I mean, Mark Giordano has obviously played the left. Like, he's a left shot defenseman. He won a Norris Trophy on the left. Is he willing to move to the right in his age 39 season? Maybe. I wondered, like, we know that Jake Muzzin wasn't comfortable playing the offside. So I feel like we can scratch that off. Like, Are they gonna move Riley to the right side? Like, is that something that you contemplate? I don't know. Like, you guys can answer this. Like, is there one pairing like you're looking at right now and being like, yep, that's for sure they're doing that? Like, I don't think that there's one even that I could say, yeah, I know for sure that's what that's gonna look like. They could do so many different things with their defense. Like, I don't know who plays with Jake Muzzin. I don't know who plays with Riley. I don't know if Sandy plays the left. I don't know if he plays the right. I don't know if, like, Justin Hall seems to be completely forgotten in a lot of the conversation. I thought he had a really good playoffs. I think he's become, like, a little underrated. Where does he fit in? Does he stay? Does he go? Like, I don't know.
Well, when we did our roster projection, I had Riley Hall as a pairing, and then Muzzin with Brody, and then Gio and Timothy Liljegren. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, where does Rasmus Sandin fit? Like, that's how we got into that conversation and why we were curious to get your thoughts on it. And it is difficult. And you're right. There's a lot of moving parts that they could move. Like, there is some flexibility within what they could do potentially. But ultimately, I would not be surprised. And it sounds like there's a little bit of contention with Rasmus Sandin's camp and Kyle Dubas, especially after some of the comments that we heard around the draft, where if there's going to be an offer sheet, let's just do it already so we can move on. Yeah. It seemed a little bit of a rash type of situation. So I wonder also if they're just looking at this and saying, maybe this is a way that we can improve our roster, move on from Rasmus Sandin, use him as a trade chip, and that's how they can potentially get that top nine forward that the Leafs desperately seem to need now with Mikheyev and Kasha going out the front door.
I would I think you have to contemplate everything if you're in their position and like you're really, really just trying to win like right now. Like you could obviously make the case and say that's insane. Like you're going to trade a 22-year-old defenseman who could play for you for a decade and play in your top four and like perform really well last year. Like you're going to trade that. Well, it's like, well, you're trying to win like next year and the year after. So if you can get a piece that helps you do that and you're not taking too much away from the defense that you have now, like I think you have to at least consider it. It's hard. Like it's not the same thing, but it's like what the Raptors are going through. Like you trade Scottie Barnes if you're going to get Kevin Durant. Now, obviously these are not the same. Like Kevin Durant's in his own stratosphere, same with Scottie Barnes, but it's like, what do you prioritize? Do you prioritize now? Do you prioritize later? But I do think it's like, it's interesting, like when Dubas is asked about playing on the right, Sheldon Keefe was asked, and neither guy said that that's what they're planning to do, which suggests to me that it's not a sure thing, and maybe it's something that Sandin isn't totally comfortable with, which is understandable.
Yeah, it didn't look great, especially that game with Morgan Rielly when they were up there, and I think Keith literally said, yeah, we're not going to try that again. So I don't know what ends up happening with Rasmus Sandin, but it's definitely one of the big storylines that we'll be keeping track of throughout the rest of the offseason. Jonas, really appreciate you taking the time, pal, and I'm sure I'll see you around throughout the summer, but thank you so much for taking the time today.
Definitely. Congrats on a good year, guys.
Really appreciate that,
buddy. You too, man.
There he goes.
You're not.
You there still, Jonas?
I just wanted to say you're not rookies anymore. That's all. Goodbye.
You're right. We're not rookies anymore. We're heading into our sophomore seasons next year, I suppose. So appreciate that one. Jonas Siegel from The Athletic.